is yours. Men have searched the earth, the air, even the sun and stars in their never-ending quest for knowledge. And now in this NBC educational feature, the United States Department of the Interior, Office of Education, brings you the wonders of that unique establishment, the Smithsonian Institution, dedicated to the increase and diffusion of knowledge. Here is an announcement of interest to everyone. An attractive folder describing future World Is Yours programs is just off the press. You can have it simply by sending a penny postcard to The World Is Yours, Washington, D.C. Why don't you send for it immediately after today's program is over? Humming, throbbing voice of power. Power, harnessed in a winged bullet shooting through the sky. Power, clothed in steel, roaring its way across the country. A million machines on the land, in the air, on the seas. Their voices roar out in thundering pride. Voices of power. Power. What is it? Why? How? All over the country, all over the world at this very minute, machines are supplying the demands of a civilization based on speed and precision. Airships carrying thousands of people from city to city, streamlined trains bringing thousands of tons of food and passengers to the nerve centers of our nation. Dynamos supplying current to turn night into day. Machines to turn out clothing. Machines to bring us news of the minute. Our civilization is enthroned upon machines. But stop and listen to the story behind them. This is the story of simple elements of which all machines are made. The four elements of mechanics. The great doors swing open and we enter the wide halls of the National Museum.
Now listen, old-timer, whenever anyone makes a statement like that to me, he has to prove it.
Why, does it sound as unbelievable as all that?
To say that all machines in the world must depend upon four simple, what did you call them, elements?
Elements, devices, whatever you want to call them. They're really the simplest of all machines.
Well, come on, what are they?
Well, you know them yourself. You just never stop to think of their importance.
I know them.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear of the lever? That's one of them.
Oh, now I know what they are.
For sure. What are the others now?
Well, the lever, that's one.
Yeah.
Then the wheel and axle.
That's right.
And the pulley and...
And the inclined plane.
Yeah, that's the four of them.
Yes, sir.
And you mean to say that on those simple principles, all our modern machinery is based?
Yes, sir. If it weren't for the lever, the pulley, the wheel and axle, and the inclined plane, there'd be no modern civilization. No modern intricate machinery. It would be impossible for mankind to be as advanced as it is.
Oh, that's a pretty broad statement, old-timer. That's the same as saying we could be able to accomplish no work whatsoever.
All right. Say it that way, then. Without those four simple devices, work would be an impossibility.
That can't be true. Of course, look. Say we didn't have a lever or a pulley or any of those things, and we wanted to move a big rock. It'd take a long time, but we could do it with our hands.
And arms.
Yeah, and arms.
That doesn't prove anything. We'd still be using a lever to move the rock. A series of them, as a matter of fact.
Huh?
Well, surely your body, Your body is built upon the lever system. Your arms, their levers, your legs.
Guess I can't find a loophole, huh?
Well, why don't you ask me what man did before he knew about those four simple machines? That ought to be a loophole.
Yeah, that's it. What did man do before he knew about them?
Caught in my trap. Huh? I'm afraid it's impossible to imagine such a time. Man, to the limit of our knowledge, has always known about the four principles. It's impossible to date the origin of the wheel or lever or any of them.
Then, in other words, primitive man used the same simple machines to do his work as we use today to do ours.
Exactly. But it's easy to trace the development of all four. 5,000 years ago, man used them to build his simple home, to row his boat, or to water his fields. Today, we use the same simple principle to speed over the highway at 90 miles an hour, or through the skies at 200.
Gosh, it does make you think, doesn't it? And right here in the Smithsonian, we have every development from beginning to end, too.
The development of mankind. Let's walk through the Smithsonian here and trace the development of one of them. The inclined plane, for instance.
What are you looking around for?
Well, a picture. A picture of a... Oh, here it is.
A pyramid. Well?
Well, how was it built? Couldn't have fallen from the sky.
Oh, I get it. Our simple principles were used to build the pyramid.
Right. Those simple machines were as valuable in the building of pyramids as our machinery is in the building of a skyscraper.
Imagine those huge things being built without modern machinery. Seems impossible.
Well, no one knows exactly how they were built. Certainly the Egyptians must have known about the four mechanical principles in their simplest forms. There are lots of theories about how they were built. And as long as we're talking about the inclined plane, let's try to visualize just what part the inclined plane may have played. In fact, probably played in the building of the pyramid.
Oh, I see one of your stories coming on. A memory?
Yes. It was in Egypt. Oh, 20 years ago, I guess it was, that I was there. I strolled out at night from my hotel. A big yellow moon was shining over the desert. The great pyramid, black against the sky. I stood there looking up at it, asking myself how. How did they do it? And then I closed my eyes, and that story I had heard seemed to come back to me. I could see thousands of men sweating in the Egyptian sun, the pharaoh gazing with displeasure upon the slowly moving work. The rustle of the sand on the side of the pyramid seemed to carry me back 5,000 years.
Oh, these dolts, what's the matter with them? Why do they work so slowly?
They are working as fast as man can work, sire. Today they have put in place two more stone blocks.
Two? Yesterday it was one, and the day before only one.
But it is difficult to raise the stone from the bottom, almighty Pharaoh.
We have thousands of slaves.
True, true. But it will take the strength of 1,000 gods to lift these blocks of stone. If the tomb becomes much loftier, sire.
Silence, you fool. I am the one to say when the tomb is to be completed. If the work cannot be hastened now, a way must be found to do so.
But, sire...
Enough! Out of my sight! Go!
Almighty Pharaoh... Might I have a word with you, sire?
Approach. Well, what is it?
I have heard your complaint that the work moves too slowly, sire.
And?
I agree with you, sire.
Oh, do you? How honored I am that you agree with me. Oh, go, I cannot be bothered with childish prattlings.
Ah, but I have a solution, sire. An idea to hasten the work.
Indeed. I have heard ideas by the basketful today. And none of them are worth a handful of sand. Well, what is this one?
Have your slaves build a hill.
A hill? Are you mad?
No, sire. Have them build a long, gently rising incline, leaning against the side of your pyramid. Do you not see, sire?
No, I do not.
Look at the top of the unfinished tomb, sire. Imagine a gently sloping road of sand from there to the ground. A roadway a mile in length. Can you not see it, sire?
Roadway? You mean on that roadway the slaves could carry
the huge stone blocks to the top. Much easier than having to lift them straight up from the base of the tomb.
Oh, yes, I see. It is easier to drag them up a long, gentle rise than up a steep one, hey?
Yes, sire. And my other idea will make it simple to drag them up the incline.
Oh, another idea.
Yes, sire. We will put small round logs under the blocks. Now, that will make the blocks easy to move. You see, do you not, sire?
Perhaps you are right. Yes, I see what you mean.
Then you accept my idea, sire.
I must think about it. Return on the morrow. I will have reached a decision by then.
Thank you, sire. I will return on the morrow.
Will you? Ikano, come here.
At your bidding, sire.
That man walking toward the tomb. See him?
I do.
I wish him to have an accident.
Knife, sire?
No. Something easier. He goes to the top of the tomb. Follow him. He will slip and fall.
Understand? Yes, I understand. From the top, sire.
If he does not have an accident, you will. So make the job a thorough one.
It shall be done.
A pity to lose so wise a man. But he has ideas. He could become dangerous. You, Samano!
At your command, sire.
Well, Samano, while you dolts have been wasting your time, I have evolved a wonderful idea.
An idea? To hasten the work?
Yes. We will build a hill.
A hill?
Oh, I did not expect you to understand. Come here. I will draw you a picture. Now we are to have a long incline. And then we will build a...
Perhaps that's how the inclined plane was introduced to the Egyptians.
I wonder when the inclined plane was first changed. I mean, so that it was even more useful to man.
Well, no one knows that, but say, come over here. Look.
A picture of a... What is it?
One of the first important applications of that simple device, the inclined plane. It's called the Archimedean screw.
Oh, Archimedes. Wasn't he the one who said, give me a place to stand, I will move the earth?
Mm-hmm. And he meant give him a place to stand and give him a lever, and he would move the earth. He realized the tremendous power of the lever and the power of the inclined plane, too. And this simple machine shows that. Now, come here. Here's another form, one that came hundreds of years later.
This motorboat propeller?
Yes, the screw propeller. Centuries before the invention of this propeller, man moved his boats over the water by means of oars. Then long after that came paddle wheels, and finally this, the screw propeller.
And this is related to the simple machine the Egyptians used to build the pyramids. Seems funny.
Yes, the inclined plane. And over years, an even more modern application.
An airplane propeller.
Still using the same principle that the Egyptians used.
They used the inclined plane to help them build pyramids. We use it to fly over them.
Yes, right, of course. But we use gasoline with which to make the inclined plane work for us. They used manpower.
So there we have a thumbnail history of the inclined plane. From the pyramids, to the Archimedean screw, to motorboat propeller, to airplane propeller.
But 1,000 stories woven around the development of that simple device.
Oh, here's another one of our machines.
Where? Ooh, the simple pulley.
But look, old-timer, that simple pulley, it's really a wheel, isn't it?
Yes, but wait a minute. Let's start from the beginning.
With a wheel, you mean?
Yes.
Well, that's easy to do.
Yes. I think the first recorded use of the wheel was about 3,000 B.C. Probably it started as a roughly hewn and rounded block of wood.
On an ox cart?
Yes. And from that, perhaps, to a chariot. And then to a metal-rimmed stagecoach wheel, maybe.
And from that to a steam engine wheel.
And now automobile wheels. Rubber-tired, self-greasing, able to stand speeds up to thousands of revolutions per minute.
But still using the same principle that the early ox cart owners used on their vehicles. But why did you want to start from the beginning with the wheels like that?
Because the next step is the wheel and axle. One of the elements used in engines and machines. We call that the gear.
Oh, I see. The wheel is the gear and the axle is the gear shaft.
Exactly. The gear is sort of half-brother of the simple pulley that we were looking at a few minutes ago. Not derived from the pulley exactly, but distantly related.
What are you looking for now, old-timer?
Some wooden... here they are. Here. Wooden gears.
Gears? Wooden ones. Gosh, I've never seen that kind before.
Oh, they're rare. These gears were doing their daily chores when the world was a world of horse-drawn coaches and spinning wheels. when animal power was still the most important means of work.
And manpower.
Yes, and something else. Wind.
Oh, wind, yes, for windmills.
That's right. Without the gear, there could have been no windmills. They played an important part in relieving man of his burden of work. All of those earliest windmills were dependent upon gears, just like these.
Windmills. They don't seem very important to us.
Well, they were to the people of the Middle Ages, though. They did work that otherwise would have had to been done by water wheels or by hand. And they caused squabbles, too, back when they first appeared.
How come?
Well, haven't you ever heard the story about the appearance of the first windmill and the trouble it caused?
No. What is it?
Well, it happened about the time of the Crusades. In England, it was. A gentleman farmer named Dean Herbert startled the country folk of southern England by installing a strange-looking tower on his farm. One day, he stood talking to a friend on this farm, and they stood looking up at the windmill.
You're going to get in trouble, Dean. I know it.
Trouble? Why?
For putting up this, what do you call it?
Windmill.
Windmill, yes. Well, you're going to get in trouble.
Oh, who says so?
The abbot, that's who. It's sinful, he says, using the wind to do your work.
Well, what does he want me to do? Grind my grain by hand?
That, or use your horses to turn the grinder.
Oh, but it's very useful. It does the work just as well as a horse or an ox, and at no expense. I don't have to feed the wind.
Ah, you certainly do have brains, Dean. How did you ever think of using the wind to grind your corn for you?
Oh, it's very simple. I knew wind would make a sailboat move, so I just put a fan of four sails on an axle up there. The axle has a gear on the end of it that fits into another gear that works my wheat grinder when the wind blows.
What won't they think up next? Uh-oh, look, Dean, the abbot.
I see him.
And he's looking up at your windmill, too. I told you were going to get into trouble, Dean.
Well, we'll see.
Well, Dean?
I beg your pardon.
Oh, come, come. I see you there. Whatever you say.
If you mean my windmill, sir, I have nothing to say.
Nothing, eh? By what right do you construct such a devilish instrument?
Devilish? Because it makes my work easier.
Oh, so it makes your work easier, does it? Mankind needs no such devices to relieve him of his daily burden.
We use animals to aid us, don't we?
They were meant to be used. Man was born to labor by the sweat of his brow. You had no authority to construct such a device.
I harm no one with it.
Harm no one? You frightened poor old Dame Norton out of her wits with your devilish contraption. Those huge arms swinging around, they must be removed. This machine must be destroyed.
You can't do it. It's mine. You're not...
You are silent. In my presence is vested the power of law. I say the machine shall come down, and come down it shall. I'll be back to tear it down. And don't ever let me see such a machine on your farm again.
Tear it down, eh? Well, go ahead. But you can't stop progress, Abbott. There'll be other windmills and other machines, too.
And that's the sort of a reception the first windmill got. But despite all opposition, that primitive machine spread all over the world and was for centuries the most valuable of all farm machines.
With a pulley, the most important part of it, eh?
Right. But even after the gear had been introduced, mankind took years to become thoroughly acquainted with its powers. Now, the bicycle is a good example.
Mm.
Now, over here is one of those ancient fellows with a big front wheel. Look at it.
Imagine anyone riding on that thing.
Well, imagine anyone getting any speed out of the thing. Yet they were the only bicycles for years. Then someone got the bright idea that perhaps gears might help to make a better bicycle. And so they made both wheels the same size, with a small gear on the back one and a big gear suspended in the middle.
Seems funny that man could have gone so long with the answer to all his daily drudgery there right in his hand and yet never take advantage of it. They had those four simple machines then, just as we have now.
Yeah, but it was power that was lacking. Why, only 200 years ago, the steam engine was an unheard-of thing. Horses did most of the sort of work that steam engines do now. And by that time, the work of the world was becoming an unbearable burden, even to their huge shoulders.
Ah, enter James Watt, eh?
Oh, no, no, not yet. There were others who dreamed of machines of tremendous power before him. Newcomen, for one. Now, he invented the steam engine long before Watt even dreamed of one.
Newcomen? Don't think I ever heard of him.
Oh, very few have. But he was a pioneer in the field of steam engines. He was the first one to build an engine which, to our modern eyes, looks like an engine. Before him, man had been content to take only the things nature laid at his feet. The wind, water, animals. He delved into the abstract, combined these simple devices that had been used for centuries and...
got a steam engine.
Right. Not much of an engine, and not very efficient, but an engine nevertheless. And two of the most important fixtures on the whole engine were simple levers, things primitive man had used thousands of years before. Without them, the machine would have been worthless.
Going right back to our simple devices again.
That's right. And there's a story about that engine and those levers, too. Those levers are important because they mark the first milestone in an attempt to create a machine independent of man's assistance. And it was a lazy boy who realized that those simple levers might be employed to do work which formerly had meant ceaseless labor for him.
A lazy boy? Did a lazy boy have something to do with inventing that first steam engine?
Oh, no. But that lazy boy, Humphrey Potter, added the final accidental touches to the machine that made it absolutely independent of man. He was employed by an English miller. The year was 1713, only a short time after Newcomen had introduced his machine. It was Humphrey Potter's job to take care of the machine. One day, as he sat browsing in his chair, the machine started to stutter and puff. Well, he looked up quickly and...
Oh, Lordy. Now I'll catch it. It's stopping.
Humphrey! Humphrey Potter! Loafing again, eh?
I didn't mean to let it stop, Mr. Tucker.
Oh, you dunce. You know you have to turn the valve on to give it steam.
I know. I just kind of dozed for a second and...
Humphrey Potter, if you don't want this job, say so and I'll get someone
else. No, sir. No, sir. I'll do it.
You better. And don't let me catch you loafing again.
Beetle nose.
What's that?
I said I'll have to heat those.
Those what?
Those water.
Water. Hump Potter, you're crazy. Now get to work and start that engine.
Yes, sir.
Gosh. Fella never can sleep around here. Now, let me see. Turn the steam valve on. Now the cold water.
Hello,
and, hello, Mort. Where'd you come from?
Oh, just walking by. Thought I'd drop in. Just heard the music.
So did I. Old Tucker's always raving about something.
I guess you don't like your job, eh,
Oh, I hate it. Pulling levers all day, over and over again. First it's the steam valve to push the piston up, then the cold water level and the piston goes down, then the steam valve on again, then...
And all the time you want to sleep, eh,
Oh, shut up.
Someday I'm going to figure out a way to make this thing work without me even touching it.
Don't worry. The man who invented this contraption would have thought of that. You'll just have to go on being nursemaid to this thing till you die, Hum.
Say.
What's the matter?
Look, why sure.
What?
That beam attached to the piston. Why couldn't that work the water valve? What if I tied a string to that arm and the other end to the valve?
Well, what would happen?
Hey, don't you see? Well, look, just as soon as that arm gets to the top of its stroke, well, it's time to turn on the cold water. Why not tie a string to it so that when it gets up that far, why, it'll just pull this lever.
Well, why don't you try it?
Yeah, wait, I've got some string right over here. Here, now, you hold this end
of the
string,
will you?
Sure. Yeah. Now, I'll tie this nice and tight up here on the arm. Now, when I get it, wait a minute.
Yeah?
Now, give me that end. Now, tie this end to the lever. Now, we'll see what happens. There goes the arm up. Look! It's pulling the lever.
It works. Say, that's quite an idea. Yeah. Why don't you tell Mr. Tucker?
Yeah. Well, for what? He'd say I was just trying to find some new way to loaf. Besides, I gotta catch up on my sleeping. The engine don't need me now.
Why, you lazy, tramp.
And so Humphrey Potter got his name into history for feeling tired. The first crude ancestor of the automatic valve gear was brought into the world. And then James Watt created a steam engine that put Newcomen's in the shade. Before the turn of the 19th century, Watt's steam engine was being used all over England, even in America. Engines capable of doing the work of 50 or 60 horses.
Say, That makes me think of something I've wondered about for a long time. This term, horsepower. How did that originate? Does it really mean a power equal to one horse?
Well, mathematically, no. But it was originated by this James Watt that we're talking about. You see, it all started when James Watt tried to sell his steam engine to the owners of coal mines. According to the story, he was attempting to sell his machine, to a wily old Englishman who was noted for his keen business head. One day when Watt was making a call on this old town.
So you want to sell me a steam engine, do you, Watt?
Yes, sir. An engine that will do better and faster work than your horses do now.
Well, my coal mine is full of water. I have to get it out of there. What will your steam engine do that?
Will it do that? My steam engine will drain the mine in a day.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to prove that.
I will. Where's your pump? I'll have my engine attached to it right now.
Very well. Come with me.
All right.
We'll see just how good that engine of yours really is.
Well, Mr. Tarleton, what do you think of my machine now?
Well, I'll have to admit it did the work all right. The mine is dry.
Then you'll buy it?
Now, just a minute. How much is this machine of yours? A small fortune, I'll wager.
Well, it'll take a little figuring, Mr. Tarleton. Now, how many horses do you ordinarily use to work your pump?
I use them in shifts of eight.
Shifts of eight. And at a gallop most of the time. And if you'll agree with me, they still couldn't pump the mine dry.
Yes, that's quite true.
Then you use about 35 to 40 horses a day. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So?
Well, in other words, my machine will do the work of 40 horses, probably nearer 50.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow you.
Well, it's really very simple. You pay me so much for every horse my machine displaces, at so much per horse. Now, if I charged you for the amount of work done, it would be much higher over a longer period of time.
Yes, that seems fair.
Why, it is fair. And my machine will work simply on water and a little fire. Is it sold?
Sold.
Good.
Imagine buying an engine with the power of 40 horses.
So that's how the term horsepower came into being. And with the birth of that term, horses themselves, slowly but surely, began to be displaced as means of power.
And real machinery came into its own.
And rapidly. Man found new ways to arrange those simple machines we call the lever and pulley and so forth. New improvements on those intricate machines man had invented meant not discovering new principles, but simply discovery of new ways to put those principles to work.
And when electricity came in, the four devices stood up and took a bow, huh?
Right. The lever, the pulley, the inclined plane, and the wheel had at last relieved man of his overburden. It's a long way from the early days of Egypt, the primitive days when even the simple devices we've talked about were new to man. Yes, it's a long way from that existence to our machine age. We owe a lot to the famous pioneers and the hundreds of forgotten figures who knew enough to use these simplest of machines in new ways. And who knows to what new uses these four simple devices may be put to in the future.
The World Is Yours is a product of the Office of Education, United States Department of the Interior, and is written by Peter J. Hawkins in cooperation with the Smithsonian Institution and the Works Progress Administration.
If you are interested in obtaining a schedule of programs for the coming weeks, you can have it simply by writing to The World Is Yours in Washington. This attractive folder will tell you of the interesting subjects to be presented by The World Is Yours in weeks to come, and also outlines reading references. Next week, we tell you about some misunderstood villains of the animal world, creatures around whom are woven some of the finest, most fantastic stories of all time. Snakes.
The original music heard on this program was composed by Rudolf Schramm. This has been an NBC educational feature. This is the National Broadcasting Company.